ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Tom Linney.
Here on ACT, we talk about how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
We also talk about how a plant-based diet is the best thing you can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, if you're concerned about the environment, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas.
Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Mike Garrett, an anti-captivity activist in Canada who's working on the problems at Marineland Canada. That's a little later on the show, but first some news.
From ABC News, the most ferocious predator in the forest, despised by cattle ranchers and feared by humans, and nearly every other animal, has a soft side. Scientists in Austria have found that when wolves howl after being separated from a pack member, they are just showing a little love. Researchers at the Wolf Science Center and the University of Veterinary Medicine, Vienna, set out to determine if the howl of a wolf is an involuntary cry caused by stress or a conscious result of a separation from a companion that is particularly important, either because of social rank within the pack or genuine affection for a preferred mate. Affection, or love, if you're romantic, clearly won out. In other words, the wolves howled the most when they had a special relationship with a missing member of the pack. The level of anxiety caused by the separation, as determined by measurements of the stress hormone cortisol in the wolf's saliva, had virtually no effect on the howling. That indicates it was friendship, not anxiety, that caused the ruckus. However, a wolf with high social standing also earned a robust vocalization from the pack. In recent years, scientists from around the world have documented cases of human-like emotions in animals, including empathy, generosity, and love. But the wolf study may be a little surprising because the apex of the canine family has a bit of an image problem. They are supposed to hate, not love. Whether the wolf's idea of love is the same as the humans is still hotly debated among scientists, but this research is based on years of observing two packs of nine wolves. The researchers said they are confident that when they say two wolves have a thing for each other, it's at least a serious case of puppy love.
The Endangered Species Act is one of the best tools we have to protect wild animals and their habitat. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has reopened a 30-day public comment period in regard to the Georgetown salamander and the Salado salamander receiving protection under the Endangered Species Act. The deadline for written comments is September the 19th. The Fish and Wildlife Service said it will make a final listing determination for the two salamanders no later than February 22, 2014. The Georgetown salamander is endangered, and the Salado salamander is vulnerable, according to the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. It's very important that these two species receive federal protection. To find out more about how you can help, go to SaveTheSalamanders.com.
From the Associated Press, two cattle operations and dairies in southwestern Idaho have agreed to stop drugging cows at such high levels that the medications could pass to human consumers in response to a lawsuit from the federal government. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration sued TNT Cattle and TNT Cattle Pearl, both dairy farms and livestock dealers in Parma, along with the owner and manager earlier this month in Boise's U.S. District Court. In the complaint, the FDA contended that animals at the farms were given medications at such high doses that once they were sold for human consumption, their meat contained illegally high drug residue levels. In the lawsuit, the FDA said that TNT livestock operations and dairies had problems with medications in animals dating back to 2002. Attorneys for the FDA said the residue levels could be dangerous for some consumers. The agency wrote in the complaint, "The ingestion of edible animal tissues containing residues of unsafe, new animal drugs can cause serious allergic reactions in drug-sensitive consumers. In addition, such food poses the hazard of contributing to the creation of drug-resistant strains of bacteria in humans who eat or handle the food." Under the agreement filed in federal court, the farm operators said they would keep better treatment records, refrain from selling animals that have illegally high drug residue in their tissues for human consumption, and stop using animal medications in unapproved ways.
The new Austin Aquarium is still months away from ever opening, but it's already being protested by local marine wildlife advocates. In the wake of reports of a horrific death log at the new Austin Aquarium owner's similar facility in Portland, Oregon, a group known as Boycott the Austin Aquarium has formed. The boycotters describe themselves as a group of local residents concerned about the welfare and treatment of the fish and animals at the Austin Aquarium. The Oregon Humane Society is investigating reports of more than 200 animal deaths in a three-month period earlier this year at the Portland Aquarium, which is owned by Vince and Amon Corvino. Those brothers are behind the new Austin Aquarium being built. The animal death log includes instances of death by starvation, infection, incorrect water temperatures, animals stuck in pumps, and animal-on-animal attacks. The Portland Aquarium has only been open for 9 months, and the 200-plus animal deaths occurred between February and May. Eric Phelps, with the group In Defense of Animals, said, "The Portland Aquarium is basically a for-profit roadside zoo masquerading as an educational facility." Amon Covino, one of the aquarium's owners, was arrested and indicted on federal charges for purchasing marine life illegally in Florida and shipping it without a permit to another aquarium they own in Boise, Idaho. At the end of August, Vince Covino was told by Austin city officials to remove fish from the facility until it's up to code. It does not have the paperwork needed to house livestock on the premises, and it does not have a building permit to perform all the work necessary to convert the building into its planned use, according to Austin city officials. The Austin Aquarium is promoting itself as the aquarium of the future, and season passes are already being sold. But Groupon, a popular online deal vendor, has canceled all deals which were being offered for the Austin Aquarium and is refunding all buyers. And the University of Texas at Austin, that had planned to work with the Austin Aquarium on educational projects, has dissolved the budding partnership because of the controversies. Speaking of fishy business practices, next on ACT Radio, we speak with Mike Garrett, a Canadian animal advocate, about the miserable conditions at Marineland Canada. That's next on ACT Radio. Joining us now on ACT Radio, Mike Garrett. Mike, thanks for being with us on the program today.
Thanks for having me.
Mike, can you start out by telling our listeners a little bit about how you got involved in animal issues?
Well, I became involved in anti-captivity issues and animal issues last year. I mean, my views on captivity and zoos and aquariums and things like that have been slowly been shaped over the last decade. Like a lot of people, when I was younger, I was taken to these places by my parents and, you know, didn't think much of it, but the more you learn about the animals that are in captivity and the types of facilities that hold them, I think that your views become certainly more clarified on what's really going on with these types of places. So I became involved in this type of activism last year.
Yeah, and it seems like, you know, every day we're learning more about how really complex and the great amount of needs that these animals have and how it's really just so difficult to meet those needs in these really confined, you know, facilities.
It's impossible. I mean, especially when you're talking about marine mammals, you know, animals such as orcas or dolphins or beluga whales that can travel. You know, an orca can travel up to 100 miles a day. I mean, it's just impossible to replicate that environment. They're highly intelligent, socially complex animals that live in groups and, you know, places cannot replicate those environments for these animals at all.
I understand that you've been active on the Marineland Canada situation. Is that associated with Marinelands in the United States?
No, it's completely separate. Marineland Canada is a captive marine mammal park located in Niagara Falls, Canada, in Ontario. It's visited annually by probably millions of people throughout the world that come here as tourists. The tourism sector is very huge in this area. A lot of Americans come here. And Marineland has operated, it's kind of its own entity for the last 50 years. And it's owned by one man. His name is John Holler. And it's not associated with any other parks or anything like that. Throughout the years, they've had business dealings with SeaWorld because obviously they're in the same industry. That business relationship has soured, but they are not associated with anyone else except themselves.
Mm-hmm. The news that's coming out of Canada about what the situation there, it's appalling, the conditions that the animals face. Can you tell us a little bit more about what's going on there?
Well, the recent news that has come out that really garnered a lot of international attention began last year. Essentially, there is a very large investigation done by the Toronto Star newspaper, which is the largest daily newspaper in Canada. And the ongoing series featured some horrific stories about the conditions that the animals are kept in at Marineland. 15 ex-employees came forward risking lawsuits and breaking non-disclosure agreements that they signed to detail persistent and ongoing animal abuse and neglect at the park. Now, this is obviously pretty appalling to read and hear about, but if you dig deeper and you look back at the five-decade history of the park, of Marineland, Canada, you'll find that this is not really a new thing. I have old newspaper articles. Once I became interested and involved in the issue, I went back and kind of researched their history. And if you go back 50 years, you can find article after article after article detailing the same kind of things every few years. Maybe ex-employees coming forward. There are a litany of problems with the park, whether it be abuse of animals, people, the environment, leveraging the legal and the political systems for their benefits. So it has a very deep history, but obviously recently, with those 15 ex-employee whistleblowers coming forward and detailing what they saw, it's really taken the spotlight.
Well, it seems like there's a great need for, you know, greater regulation of sea mammal captivity.
In Canada, here in Ontario, we don't have hardly any regulation in regards to marine mammal captivity, and that is the problem. The organizations vested to oversee these types of operations, They don't have any teeth in the laws, and they don't have any teeth to really do anything. The OSPCA is an organization that will come in and look around, but again, they don't have the expertise or the jurisdiction to do anything about it. You don't really even need a license, technically, to have an orca, a killer whale, or a beluga whale, or a dolphin in captivity here in Ontario. So
wow.
There's no real oversight as far as regulations go. And Marineland has exploited that for its entire history. You can't really be found to be breaking any laws if there are no laws to break.
I don't understand why they can't at least clean up the water. It's just appalling that so many marine mammals and other aquatic animals have gone blind at this park because of the water quality.
From what I understand, there's been ongoing water quality issues for many years at Marineland. Early last year, they did a water dump just before the season ended because the water had turned green because there was problems with the system. The OSPCA did come in after much of this came out in the news, and they did ask Marineland for an independent review of their water system and an overhaul of it. But from what I understand, that it's been a persistent problem that they've never been able to solve throughout their history. And I guess when, you know, you're in the middle of the continent and you're trying to replicate seawater or the best scenario for these animals, you're never really going to get it right. It's never going to be what it should be for these animals in the wild, in the ocean.
Right. And I think that really sums it up well, is, you know, why not just go to the source, you know, see the animals in the wild as opposed to trying to visit a facility like this.
Absolutely.
So many zoos and marine parks try to build themselves as educational facilities, but it's obvious you really can't learn anything about the behavior of animals when they're in captivity.
No, it's fairly obvious that is very false. Marineland especially, if you ever go there, you'll notice that there is a real void of any educational value by going to watch marine mammals forced to perform tricks, circus-like tricks, in order to get dead fish, which they would never even eat in the wild to begin with. Mm. I don't see any educational value of a so-called marine mammal trainer standing on the head of a whale and jumping off and making dolphins jump through hoops and things like that. There's a lot to be learned about these animals in the wild. We have learned so much about them in the wild. The studies on the west coast of North America, especially in the state of Washington and the province of British Columbia, we've learned far more about whales there than we ever have in a place like Marineland or SeaWorld.
You know, going back to orcas, I mean, they're really such a hot topic now with, you know, the movie Blackfish and some of the incidents that have happened with the trainer being killed. What's going on there? It seemed like they had several many years ago, and now they're just down to one.
Marineland used to have quite a bit of orcas at one time. They've been capturing them since the early 70s, and they've been holding them in terrible substandard conditions. They recently, about 10, 15 years ago, they recently built larger pools when the government seemed like they were going to step in and actually maybe regulate the environments, but they never did. Marineland, you know, just to give you an idea of the success of their breeding program, I mean, in the last 20 years alone, 14 orcas have died there all prematurely.
Jeez.
They are down to one lone orca. Her name is Kiska, and she's been alone for a couple of years now, swimming alone in circles, but she has been at Marineland for over 34 years or so.
Man.
So that's the orca that has lasted the longest there. And if, you know, you really look at a female orca in the wild, 34 years is very young still. They're still breeding at that age.
Are you associated with an organization that is working against Marineland?
I'm not associated with an organization per se. There are a couple organizations that are working towards ending captivity at Marineland, ending the exploitation of the animals at Marineland. I myself have chosen to take more of an independent route. I've tried to get as much information out to the public via, you know, different ways, different methods. Social media is also being out there outside the park, leafleting on public property. Nowadays, you know, you don't need to have a big group stand behind you necessarily, but you do want to approach the various ways to try to affect change by speaking to politicians, speaking out to the public through the media, such as our interview today, and trying your best to affect change that way.
And I understand it's caused you a little bit of personal problems.
Yeah, well, basically, you know, this summer in the beginning of the season, the operating season it's a seasonal operation there in the summertime. I began standing at the exit of Marineland on public property and offering leaflets to the vehicles that were exiting, to the people that were exiting. It's very non-confrontational. People have already paid their money. They've gone through the park. They've had a long day. They have their children with them, so there's no real reason to get into a big debate about it, but it offers people information about the park, so, you know, perhaps those leaflets will end up somewhere else or in the hands of someone thinking about going, or if these people are thinking about returning and they didn't know the information about the park, it might provide them with a more informed opinion. So I began doing that, and on the very first day I was out there, standing on public property, the owner of Marineland, John Holler, came out with his security staff and threatened to kill me, which was an incident that was caught on video. I did try to go to the police to have charges laid, and they refused to lay charges, which is kind of the history with this guy. He's threatened many protesters and demonstrators in the past and seems to be able to skate through any legal issues without any scars. Shortly after a few weeks of leafleting, I was hit with a $1.5 million lawsuit by Marineland.
And it really seems like this is just really a strategic lawsuit to keep you all from speaking out.
Yeah, it's called a slap suit, and they're pretty commonly known as a strategic lawsuit against public participation. Marineland is currently suing five other people, so I'm the sixth lawsuit that they've launched in 9 months. And these lawsuits are designed to entangle you in a lengthy, drawn-out legal process, which you can't hope to battle. Basically, they're intended to exhaust you either financially or mentally, and hopefully you just go away. They're intended to silence any opposition or any critics that they may have. They have used this tactic in the past.
Seems like it would be at least an opportunity for publicity. I hope you can weather this storm.
Well, that's what I'm hoping. I mean, essentially the lawsuit is saying that I can't stand on public property and distribute information to people. They're also claiming that I'm conspiring into some sort of conspiracy to run a violent, radical campaign against them. which is funny because the owner was the very first guy to come out and threaten to kill me while I was standing there peacefully. So they have a lot of nonsense in their lawsuit, and like I said, these types of lawsuits are illegal, actually, in a lot of places. They have anti-SLAPP legislation in many places in the United States and throughout Canada. In this jurisdiction here, we don't have that legislation yet. So it is a bit of an issue because, I mean, obviously I do need to answer it. It's a lawsuit. It's a very serious issue. I need to have competent legal representation in order to fight it. You know, I found a lot of support from the community so far, and I'm really happy to say that. There's been people that have been from the animal rights side of things that support, obviously, my actions. And then there's people, obviously, on the free speech side of things where they support our ability. You know, we should have the ability to protest on public property and the right to free speech.
I think what even bolsters your campaign is it seems like there's several trainers that have come out and said things. I mean, what are the trainers saying? And these are people that really, you know, when they talk about it, they thought these were going to be their dream jobs, and now they leave with a sour taste because they really just can't provide the kind of care that these animals need.
Well, I think that sums it up rather nicely, actually. A lot of these trainers, you know, they start off thinking that it is a dream job, and they slowly see what goes on in this industry and how profits come first and animals come last. And, you know, the industry likes to say that the animals are their greatest assets. But if you look at the numbers and how quickly they die in captivity and how often they die, that's not the case at all. I mean, they're assets as long as they're alive and baby whales are being born, but they don't last very long. And the type of care that is provided will obviously, you know, contribute to that. And the trainers are the frontline staff. They see it there. When the trainers came out and they said, you know, they care immensely about the animals, and I truly believe that they do. When they came out and they risked lawsuits of their own, and several of them are being sued by Marineland, they mentioned all the terrible conditions that are going on. They're contributing to the poor health of the animals and the suffering of the animals. And immediately Marineland would come out in a newspaper article and try to smear or discredit these trainers. And these are people that work with the animals on a day-to-day basis for 12, 13, 14 years. So you can come out and try to discredit these people, but if you were not very confident in these people to begin with, then why would you put them in charge of your greatest assets?
Well, and I read one story about a beluga whale that, you know, there was a trainer or maybe just a staff person that was on hand, but they were trying to get someone there to help with an incident with the beluga for 2 hours, and there wasn't a trainer available to come and help. What happened there?
Well, one of the issues that some of the trainers have raised is the chronic understaffing of people at Marineland. There's no one there to watch and oversee the animals properly. I believe the incident that you're talking about was an attack on a baby beluga whale from a couple other belugas. And there was no one there. There was no trainer. There was no vet. There was nobody on staff. There was a park guide there that day. And the attack went on for a couple hours until the baby beluga unfortunately succumbed to her injuries. And it was a horrifying incident. And the guide was trying to get people on the radio, trying to get people to come down, and no one was available. So that's one of the issues that the former employees and trainers have raised, is that chronic understaffing also contributes to issues like that.
One of the things I read in the Star article about Marineland was a quote from Holler that, in referring to some of the deaths of the marine animals, he said, "You have to understand, for people and all living things, there is a time to live and a time to die." Shows, you know, no empathy at all.
No empathy at all. And, you know, I understand what he's trying to say. He's trying to say everything dies, sure, and that's true. Everything does die. We all have a lifespan. But if you look at the lifespan of these animals in captivity, they are greatly and drastically reduced.
The quality of life is so limited.
Well, that's it. You can't recreate their quality of life, and you basically go out and capture these animals from their families in the wild. And they do live in highly social and highly complex, tightly knit families, tightly knit pods, these orcas and beluga whales and dolphins. And you essentially rip them from their families in a violent process. You drag them halfway across the continent, throw them into a concrete tank, and force them to live in possible social situations that are not compatible, because that does happen with these animals as well. They're from different ponds. They use different languages and dialects and things like that. And the quality of life is horrible in a situation where you're trying to recreate seawater using ozone and chlorine. And it's no wonder that the mortality rates of these animals are so high at a place like Marineland. Probably has one of the worst mortality rates of any aquarium in the world.
Jeez. We've been talking with Mike Garrett, an anti-captivity activist in Canada who's been working on the issue of Marineland Canada. We appreciate you being with us on the show and giving us this information, Mike. Can you tell us where people can go to learn more information or perhaps to help you with your legal defense?
Right now, yeah. I mean, with the legal defense, I certainly want to take Marineland on and continue the fight against captivity and, you know, retain our rights to free speech and public protest. If folks are able to help, that would be great. There has been a legal defense fund set up, and you can donate directly through PayPal, and that would be at Mike Garrett, with two R's and two T's, defensefund@gmail.com. So it's Mike Garrett, defensefund@gmail.com. And also, if you would like to know more about the story and see the video of the owner of Marineland threatening me and reading more about what we've been talking about, there's also a GoFundMe website set up as well. So if you go to GoFundMe.com and you just type in the search bar Mike Garrett and Marineland, you'll find my page there.
Great, Mike. Thanks again for joining us. Keep up the fight.
Thank you very much for having me on.
If you'd like to learn more about what's going on in El Paso at the vegetarian scene, please go to the Vegetarian Society of El Paso at vsep.org.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACK Radio, you can go to ktep.org. Just click on the listen button.
Until next time, I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Tom Linney.
For the earth, the animals, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to ACK Radio.
Stone River, water ain't running no more. Stone River, water ain't running no more. Man, he done cut it off and moved it all around. There ain't no river running, no water can be found. Stone River, swimming, ain't no fish around nowhere. Fish ain't swimming, ain't nobody seems to care. They bottled up and damned it, choked it up and jammed it, killed the life around it, and stole it like a bandit. Stone River, to be a river, now it's just an empty sign.